We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. This week's episode is sponsored by TickPick, who should be your first choice to buy football tickets because they've saved fans money by never charging any service fees ever. TickPick is the exclusive ticketing partner for Striking Gold and the Blue Wire Network. My name's Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for the fine folks here at the B-Dub. And joining me tonight is my co-host, the man in charge of the beast that is NinersNation.com, KP, Kyle Posey. How is your Tuesday going, bro?
The B-Dub. It's going well, man. Watched some footballs. We watched the 49ers game. And that's pretty much it. I feel like my life is just football, so there's that. How about you, man? How's your... your masks going?
I mean Tuesday it was fine. Tuesday was good. It's just an easy day at school. The art teaching's going as well as you would think it'd be going. Pretty sweet job. We had to pause our football season for a little bit because of a couple COVID cases, so we had to like take a week off, make sure that no other players were getting it, and I think we're supposed to kick back up this week, like Friday or something. But so that's been interesting. You know, trying to adapt to the school world with COVID constantly creeping around. And then the masks. Yeah, masks are going good, bro. I mean, nobody here wants to hear about my creepy-ass hobby of painting Michael Myers masks. But if you do, let me know. I'll talk to you about it. But it ain't really a thing. And yes, we know. TickPick sounds like something else. All right? We know. It's going to be a challenge going forward. Our sponsors, TickPick, check them out, but just hope that I don't slip. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I don't need to say it. Just, you already know. But anyways, that's as random as it's going to get. Hey, did you watch the Raiders game yesterday?
I did. There was a lot going on in that game. Talk about a roller coaster of emotions.
That was a fun game, bro. I did not care who won. I just wanted to see something entertaining, and boy, was it entertaining.
So I'm a degenerate gambler. And I had the Raiders +4 and could have lost probably 17 times in that game. But thank you, Lamar, for not holding on to the ball and making me a happy man.
Right, man. I mean, that was – oof, man. And that play to ice it, that was sweet. I love that. I love that. And
every game should be like that, right?
I know, man. You wish it could. You wish it could. I mean, if overtime is going to be that exciting, then give me overtime all the time. But – usually that just isn't the case.
What'd you think, man, about, since we're tangenting, what did you think about the overtime suggestion that they threw out talking about, you know, or I think it was Russell Wilson, where he pretty much said, what, you know, why is a game ending in a tie? Do you think these regular season games specifically should end in a tie?
No, I mean, no, I don't want to say that, but given the reality of like TV deals and time constraints and stuff like that, like I get it. They can't just have a game that goes on like literally an hour and a half longer than it's intended to.
Right.
You know, I think that's the point of it. But, you know, at the same time, I've for a long time, I don't necessarily mind pro football overtime in any way, but I've always wanted it to be like college. Like, I love college football overtime. You know, it's so damn fun. And it's a bit more like, it's like football's version of penalty kicks. You know what I mean? Both teams get it at the 25 and you get to go until you one up the other person. And I like that a lot. I like it a lot. But again, I'm not sure if that saves any time. That to me, for some reason, pops up as like the driving force. But I think that whatever the NFL can do to keep a game from ending in a tie, they should definitely do. No one likes a dash one at the end of their record.
Right. No, and that's a good point. I do think it would go faster if they got to start at the 25-yard line.
Oh, for sure.
But
it could take 5 minutes. You know, the first team scores a touchdown and the other team doesn't get one, and that's it. You know, it's
that's all she wrote.
So
anything happened to 49ers land?
No, not at all. So that's it for today, folks. We'll talk. yeah, quite a bit, man. And this is hard for me to talk about, dude, because y'all know that, you know, I consider myself to be moderately close with the good old Raheem Mostert, but he called it a year today. If you haven't heard, he opted to for season-ending surgery. Initially, Kyle Shanahan seemed like he thought it would be a little more minor, something that took about 8 weeks to heal up. But Raheem said that he talked to – actually, I'm just going to read it. I'm going to read Raheem's little announcement, which I got it right here. I'm just going to read it word for word starting now. Faithful, after consulting with multiple doctors and weighing my options, I will be having season-ending surgery to repair my knee. This gives me, without a doubt in my mind, the best possibility at coming back 110%. I have always come back stronger, and I will this time too. I have faith in myself, my doctors, my support system, my team, and God. He makes no mistakes. I'm gutted. This sucks. This is obviously not what I work so hard for. I wish more than anything I could be out there on the field with my brothers. Thank you for your support in our decision. I'm far from done, in all caps, signed, Masterati. So, I mean, to me, knowing him, you can see the emotion. It doesn't even take me knowing him to see the emotion kind of in the way he wrote it. And when he posted the picture of what he wrote, it just a little heartbroken emoji. So it sucks, man. I mean, I assumed Raheem was going to have a massive year this year. Massive. And I'm sure he thought that too. And he spent all offseason working his ass off to put himself in the position to do that. And it doesn't always go down like that. And I feel for him, especially after his wife came out and said, you know, talked about all the grotesque things that people were saying to them after Raheem got hurt. And it was just a really shitty situation that I almost had to refrain from commenting on Twitter, and I haven't commented on it because it's just it's so fucking disgusting and it pisses me off.
Same.
You know, right. Yeah. What do you think, man?
That really got under my skin, and I hate that we treat these guys like zoo animals. I hate that we don't humanize the sport I imagine most of these players are just fantasy people who lost their freaking week one matchup. Like, think about that. You lost a game where maybe you played, maybe you put in $20 for the season. Maybe you put in 50 or 100. None of that is anywhere near the value of going to somebody's DMs and that, like, now their wife has to worry about. Because when you might be saying something out of frustration or even in jest, there's no way for that other person on the other side to know that, especially when they have a family and kids. So I can only imagine like how many different types of, like you said, grotesque things that were said to them. And that happens to these guys all the time. And there's never any repercussions for the people who are saying these things, which that's what really gets me, man. And they're going to be able to do the same thing next week to whoever other running back disappoints them, because they don't live up to your standards in a freaking game. you get to say whatever you want. Like, that's not how it works, man. And that's, I mean, among, I'm dumbing it down quite a bit. Honestly, if it was up to me, Raheem would be able to go in the ring with anybody who said anything about him for 4 minutes and let's duke it out. Like, let's see you say that to his face, man, because everyone's a keyboard warrior. Everyone's tough when there's no repercussions, but I really can't stand it. And it always comes back to just, you know, treat people how you want to be treated, man. You would never say that to his face. You'd never, ever say that to his face, just knowing what would happen to you. So why is it okay in a scenario like this?
And then it blows my mind even more that people would not only be, they would be so angry and so off, out of their mind, that they would say it to his wife, like the mother of his children. Like, what are you doing? Like, at that point, I wish there was a way where people could just be banned from participating in the NFL and football, because they've just obviously veered so far out of the realm of reality that you don't deserve it anymore. And that's really all it goes down to. And you put the nail on the head in the fact that none of you guys, whoever said it, would never say it to his face ever. So,
like, that wouldn't cross your mind.
No, but you know, I feel for Raheem, man. The guy is, we know he's so incredibly talented.
Yes.
We know what he's capable of doing, and it just sucks that his body's not allowing him to do that. And I hope he gets healthy, and whether it's the 49ers or another team, you know, takes a little bit of a risk on him next year. And I hope it works out, man. I hope Raheem gets to do what he does. I don't know if he's going to be with the 49ers. If you don't know, he's in a contract year. His contract's up after this year. So he will be spending the end of his 49ers contract rehabbing from this knee surgery. And whatever happens after that, we'll see. He'll obviously have a market. There'll be plenty of teams interested in him, including the 49ers. I don't know what that's going to entail. We'll see. But I hope everything goes well with his recovery and he does well and truly get to come back 110%, because, you know, the NFL is just a better place with the fastest person in it. So,
yeah, man, like, it's not just that he's fast. He's really freaking good. Like, he's really good at what he does. And you saw that when he carried the ball a couple of times. We've seen it every time he's on the field. For as much as we talk about the 49ers defense and their pass rush in that 2019 Super Bowl run, look at what Mostert was doing the second half of the season. He was unreal. So Josh Dubow from the AP tweeted this out on Tuesday, that most yards per carry in NFL history for running backs in the regular season and the playoffs, Raheem Mostert is number one, averaging 5.7 yards per carry. That's better than Bo Jackson.
Right.
But, like, that's the type of player he could be. And every time he's on the field, whether it's last year, remember the first couple games, breaks off 80-plus yard runs, even against the Lions, as I mentioned. If he would have carried the ball 15 times, he's easily getting over 100 yards. And I think if people were to go back to watch the game to see, like, what Elijah Mitchell did, and think, because we're seeing that, oh, running backs are replaceable, Kyle Shanahan can do this for anybody. I don't think that's the case. Yes, Mitchell had a good game. I don't think he's anywhere near the running back that Raheem Mostert is, man. So they're going to miss him, and it might not show up in the box score just because they're going to have success. But when you said he was going to have a huge year, based on the offensive line and the upgrades, there's no doubt about it, man. So, yeah, it sucks that we're not going to be able to see him because he is a special player.
Yep. So kind of the ripple effect, you know, but hey, get well, Raheem, and we'll hopefully we'll see you soon. I'll shoot you a text, bro. here's what shows you the type of person Raheem is. I had sent him a text just saying, hey, man, I hope you get well soon. And he responded the next day saying, hey, dude, you know, thanks. Appreciate it. Sorry I didn't get back to you yesterday. You know, it's been a busy couple days. And it was Monday. And the day before was the fucking game. And I'm like, dude, you don't have to apologize for not texting me on the game, the day of the game that you got hurt. Like, dude, he's just a saint, man. And I hope everything works out for him, for him and his family, because he deserves it. He really does. But moving on, obviously losing somebody like Raheem for the season has a huge amount of ripple effects throughout the entire team, but more specifically the running back room. We know that at least for now, Elijah Mitchell, rookie, sixth rounder, is the guy. He was at four now. He's the guy because against the Lions, he was the guy. He led everybody else in carries by 16 carries. And the person who was closest behind him was Jimmy Garoppolo. Elijah Mitchell had 19 carries for 104 yards and a touchdown, including a 38-yard score. So he's the man right now. But as we know, in kind of a Kyle Shanahan backfield, especially with a third-round pick in Trey Sermon, that you can tell they want to kind of maybe light a fire under or see a little bit more from, Elijah Mitchell's the guy for now. And, you know, you also got Jamichael Hasty back there. So I don't know, man. How do you kind of see this playing out there, KP? Do you think it's just Elijah Mitchell and still it's not? Or do you think Kyle Shanahan's just kind of rotated around and see what he's got?
Yeah, we got to figure out what's going on with Trey Sermon. Obviously, Shanahan said he wasn't one of the best three running backs to make it out of camp, and that's why he didn't play. I think this was kind of a doghouse situation, both for him and Brandon Ayuk. I think that it's going to be Sermon. I think that Sermon's probably going to lead the team in carries and yards by the end of the season. Would not be surprised if that happened as soon as next week. Elijah Mitchell is probably going to be a great complimentary back, but at the same time, 19 carries would probably be right around the season or career high for Raheem Mostert. So Mitchell definitely earned the trust of the coaching staff, I would say. But, like, how much of that was just due to him being the hot hand and maybe the team not trusting Jamichael Hasty? So there's a lot of different ways you can spin it, a lot of different questions. But I think ultimately it's going to come back to Sermon and, you know, what he brings to the table, if he's ready to roll, if he's out of the quote-unquote doghouse or whatever it is, because they need to find a guy who can block. And I told you before we recorded that is not Jamichael Hasty. It's probably going to be Elijah Mitchell as far as receiving goes. But I think Trey Sermon just offers the best of all worlds. So it always comes back to him. Then again, Jeff Wilson, week 7, week 8, week one of those two is probably when he'll come back. And since he has experience, obviously, and he is a very good runner, he's going to fit into that picture once we cross that bridge. So it's going to be – I don't think they're going to struggle. They're just not going to have Raheem Mostert, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. You're gonna score a B+, but you could have scored an A+. You know, it's like, yep, they're not gonna be, you know, and maybe we're even talking an A-, but you're not gonna have that A+ because there's really Raheem is the guy that unlocks that. And Raheem's running style also matched the offense perfectly. And the fact that, you know, you kinda wait, find your crease, cut and go. And Raheem was really good at that. So it's not like the 49ers are going to be hurting, though. They got a lot of talent. And then, a little bit of roster news. Former second rounder for the Lions, Kerryon Johnson, was signed to the practice squad. He was signed earlier by another team and dropped really quickly. I should have looked up who that was, but I mean, it doesn't really matter. I'm not sure exactly what he's capable of at this point and what his prospects look like as far as working his way up the roster. Because one thing we have to mention is Jeff Wilson Jr., who also underwent, you know, a minor surgery, kind of something very similar to Raheem from what I know, or what Raheem was supposed to do initially. He's still on his way. I think that he's probably about 6 weeks out. What's the minimum they have to miss?
So when they go the on pup IR? Week, you have to he's on the pup, and he has to miss 6 weeks. So the earliest he can return is week 7.
Okay. So
Shanahan said.
Yeah, and that's what I expect. And Jeff Wilson Jr. is an absolute beast. So if he comes back good to go, I fully expect him to step into the picture and whoever emerges as the guy to kind of complement them. So the 49ers got a lot going on at running back, as they always do, and not necessarily a bad thing. It's just kind of an unknown right now. You know, losing Raheem, that's a big deal. That's a bad thing, but everybody else in the competition to become that guy really can't hurt the 49ers. The only way it can hurt them is if nobody wins it and nobody really emerges as the guy. So interesting. You got any more thoughts on the whole running back situation?
No, I think just as far as Elijah Mitchell goes, like, I don't want to seem like I'm crapping on him because I do think he has the potential to be very good, but just comparing him to Mostert, I felt like he missed a few cutback lanes or tried to cut it back when it wasn't there. And that is going to be something to keep an eye on. If he's like leaving yards on the field, so to say. Again, it sounds so weird to talk about him like that after just running for 100 yards in his rookie debut. But he has to get better, and I imagine he will.
Right. Yeah. I mean, first game. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. And you got to wonder how many reps he got during training camp too, because I'm sure he got plenty, but at the same time, you've got,
he was out for like 2 weeks.
Right. And you got guys around him too, that have to get their touches as well. So this was probably the most Elijah Mitchell's gotten the ball since the start of the offseason program. So, hopefully you see some strides for him. We got to touch on Jason Verrett and the 49ers cornerback situation. We'll also touch on a little bit of Brandon Ayuk. But before we do that, we got to get a couple words in from our sponsors. First, we got Tick Pick Football. It's finally back. No need to exhaust yourself searching all over the internet to find 49ers tickets anymore. Tick Pick, that's TickPick, is the original no-fee ticket site and the only one you'll ever need as your go-to for all NFL tickets. Tick Pick got rid of all those awful service fees that the other ticket sites charge, which lets them guarantee the best price on all of their NFL tickets. Don't believe it? If you can find a better price for the same seats on another site, TickPick will give you 110% of the difference on the purchase price. Y'all know in 2 weeks, we've got 49ers, Packers, home opener. It's going to be a massive game, despite how bad the Packers looked against the Saints. They'll figure out it's going to be a big game. So make sure you jump on TickPick. They've got you covered. Visit TickPick.com/gold today and use the promo code GOLD to save $10 on your first order of 49ers tickets. All right. That's TickPick. Give it a look. Yeah. So both the site, the backslash is gold and the promo code is gold. G-O-L-D. Give it a look.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
So, moving on in 49ers land, the 49ers, since we've last been on here, the 49ers did confirm that Jason Verrett did suffer a torn ACL, which puts me in about the same mood that Raheem's announcement does. Like, they're just both such great stories being constantly shitted on by horrible injury luck. And I mean, Jason, as good of a running back Raheem is, Jason Verrett is as good of a corner. And it just sucks that these guys are just, they're handed the hand they're dealt. It is what it is. And I love everything about Jason Verrett's comeback story and what he was building. And it just sucks that we're not going to see that happen. And we'll see where he goes from here. I think, you know, different variations of severity, but I think this is his fourth season-ending injury. Do you know that? Because you obviously cover the Chargers too. So,
yeah, that would sound right. I know. I'm pretty sure 2015 was like the only year, wasn't it? So, dang, that's tough, man.
Yeah, you're literally just looking at one of the premier corners in the NFL that just cannot get on the damn field, from what we know, to no fault of his own. Like, you've never heard anything about him, like a lack of preparation or a lack of, you know, taking care of himself. It's just garbage.
So
it's garbage.
In 2016, he played 4 games and then shut it down. In 2017, 1 game. In 19, remember the Steelers game, and then he shut it down after that. And then last year, he started 13 games. So, and then this one. So, yeah, 1, 2, 3, and then 4. Man, that's rough.
Yeah, it sucks, man. It sucks. It's rough. So, same thing.
How big of a cornerback problem does this team have?
Oh, man, like, I want to say it's a pretty big problem. Now, could things be okay? Yes. but it just seems like it's unfolding exactly how I thought it would, or not how I thought it would, because you all know I'm not a negative guy. It just when all was said and done and all the moves were made, even after the draft when they drafted two corners, I still felt like this team was like one injury away from trouble. And obviously, I didn't want to just outwardly continue to say that if Jason Brett gets hurt, it's just a horrible way to talk about the team. But, you know, you always knew that if that happened, he was their guy, their premier guy, their lockdown guy. And now he's gone. So you've got Emmanuel Mosley, who was the number two behind Jason Brett. He's not even playing right now. Kyle Shanahan is still holding out hope that he will play this weekend against the Eagles. And
God, he has to play.
I know. Stepping up behind him was Diamador Lenore. And he played all game, and you never heard his name. So that is a good thing. And I think he played every defensive snap.
He did.
So for a fifth-round rookie, that's pretty impressive. And if he develops into a quality corner, then the 49ers may not be in trouble. If he doesn't, you know, and Ambry Thomas, the third-rounder, doesn't push him for time or, you know, compete for that spot. Emmanuel Mosley struggles with injuries. Like, you're talking significant playing time for Dante Johnson or Josh Norman, who they signed recently. Or the recently signed former Arizona Cardinals, longtime Bengal, I believe.
Yep.
Where did Drake – was that where Drake Kirkpatrick spent most of his time?
Yeah, he was a first-round pick for the Bengals.
Okay. Yeah, and so kind of just easing my way into news there. The 49ers did sign free agent corner Drake Kirkpatrick. Last year played for the Cardinals. Played most of his career with the Bengals. Basically a 10-year starter. He started almost every year except for his rookie year. So pretty durable guy. I mean, nothing necessarily worth writing home about in terms of what I've read and seen as far as coverage ability. And I'll feel free to correct me on that. But he does have some plays to his name. He does get his hands on the ball. He just also lets the receivers get their hands on the ball pretty often. So, but at least you've got a guy with experience out there that's proven he can stay on the field. Now, again, 10-year vet. How long that's going to last, I don't know. Same thing can be said with Josh Norman, except Josh Norman didn't have as long or as prominent of a career. You know, he had like 1 year where everybody considered him to be the man, and then that kind of went away really quick.
So there's a lot of tape on Kirkpatrick from last year because he did start for the Cardinals for 11 games. He allowed a 63% completion percentage, which not ideal. He did allow 6.8 yards per target, which is good. Like anything under 7 is a good number. And he only allowed 2 touchdowns, which is also good. But you did mention like there is the big play. So the average, while the average is good, you know, there's always a big play. And he turns 32 next month. So you have to imagine he was never really, you know, like a burner to begin with. But if we're rolling into November and December with Kirkpatrick, 32-year-old Kirkpatrick, and Josh Norman, who I believe is the same age, that you imagine teams are going to take advantage of that, especially in this freaking division, because there are burners all over the place.
Right. I mean, you've got Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. You've got DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, Christian Kirk, and then for the Rams, I mean, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Tyler Higbee. Like, the 49ers are going to see no shortage of pass catchers within their own division, let alone on all the other teams. So,
and look at the quarterback. The quarterbacks are far more important too. So like Kyler is going to run around forever, so you have to be able to cover longer. Same with Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And Stafford is going to stretch the field, as we saw Sunday night. So yeah, I would be very worried if Lenore doesn't turn out, you know, to be a competent player.
Yep. I mean, the 49ers just promoted Dante Johnson to the active roster today, so that should tell you about where they are. You know, and I'm not hating on Dante Johnson. He's done a tremendous job at maintaining himself to a point where NFL teams feel like they need him on their roster. And that for a long time, I think this is like its eighth year, in the league, somewhere around there. So, I mean, you could never hate on that because it takes a quality football player to remain in the league that long. But at the same time, he's not the guy that you want trotting out there for the first play. So 49ers are in a spot at corner. We'll see. I don't think they're done surveying the options. I don't think they're done making moves. I think Drake Kirkpatrick was an easy thing to do. Sign him to a vet minimum, and let's roll. And we'll see what we can do next week. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. We'll see. The 49ers in a good – at least the 49ers are one of the best teams to have corner problems because they've got such a good defensive front. By all we saw in that game, Nick Bosa has not skipped a beat, and neither has D Ford, who was solid. What did you see from D Ford, bro?
Yeah, he was great. So on Dre Greenlaw's interception, that was pick six. That was because D Ford walked the right tackle back into Goff's lap and hit him as he was throwing the ball. So Goff couldn't even follow through, and that's why there was an errant throw. Obviously, he had a sack. He was really impressive. I think that speed rush around the edge is exactly what this defensive line needs, man. All of them are good, honestly. Ford, I would argue, was the best. I know Nick Bosa had that crazy sack, which on the rewatch was even better somehow. But Penei Sewell was also really good. So that was a fun matchup. But Bosa, I mean, he was still good. He still had a tackle for loss. He still is just an insane run defender. I think that's another thing that we kind of forget about and forgot about. With Bosa out, that he makes so many plays, and it's not all just passing. You know, it's not all just winning against the pass. So between those two and, you know, the guys that they have up the middle, they can all get after it with the pass as pass rushers. I do think they need Kinlaw back, though, because they were getting moved around a little too easily up front, specifically number 92, Mr. Zach Kerr. I don't want to, you know, shit on him here, but he was getting pancaked. He was on the ground way too much. And between him and Kevin, it happened to Kevin Givens a little bit, but yeah, Detroit was moving the ball way too easily, and it was just running up the middle. And I do want to say, like, a part of that is because of, and again, I'm just, you know, talking down on all the players now, apparently. I don't think Dre Greenlaw played well. I know he had that pick six, but he missed like three tackles in the first half, and he was just guessing wrong, it seemed like, as far as like fitting the run and just being aggressive in general. So that has to change. And I feel like a lot of that would change if DJ Jones and Javon Kinlaw and hopefully Maurice Hurst come back. So, but you hit it on the head just as far as the cornerbacks. They won't be as big of a deal if the 49ers are able to generate pressure as they were. Like if D Ford stays healthy, if Nick Bosa is Nick Bosa. Eric Armstead was actually really freaking good. He was credited for 9 pressures. And it seemed like he was in the backfield, you know, probably more than anybody. So they did a lot of creative stuff up front where Ford and Bosa lined up on the same side along a lot of times. There was a couple of plays where it was Ford on the edge. Bosa was the D tackle next to him. And then next to him was Eric Armstead. So they can get creative. They have a bunch of dudes who can win. And then you have like the hustle guys like Samson Ebukam who remember on that one play, he almost took the handoff from Goff. So they have a lot of talent up front, and I think, you know, that's what the 49ers are relying on. Can these guys win the game or hide our secondary for us? And we are going to have to find that out earlier than we expected.
Right. Yeah, it's going to get weird. And speaking of getting weird, segue time. I don't know what to make of this Brandon Ayuk stuff, bro. Like, just to set the table. You're talking about the 49ers, like, wide receiver one. Now, I get it. Deebo Samuel's really good. Deebo Samuel's also struggled with injury. He struggled with preparing for games. He struggled with being a pro off the field. Not in a discipline sense, but in preparation sense, yeah, he struggled with his hands. And it was, to me, it was clear that just in his rookie year that Brandon Ayuk stepped in and said, you know, look at me. I'm the captain now. And it – now, all of a sudden, that – and I was predicting a huge year for Brandon Ayuk, and that could still happen. I'm not trying to ring the alarms here. But it worries me that in the game's opening – the 49ers opening game, Brandon Ayuk saw like 20-something snaps, never had a single target. The most action he saw day was – Sunday was returning one punt. And then Kyle Shanahan said – it essentially had to do with he was nursing back a hamstring injury. But also, Trent Sherfield's been really good, which nobody has any argument with that. So Kyle Shanahan says it wasn't a difficult decision. I'm good with either. And to me, I'm like, no. Like, look, maybe Sherfield is that good. We'll approach that later. But you're talking about the 49ers, like, guy on the outside. Like, he is supposed to be the guy. And I don't want to hear Kyle Shanahan say, I'm good with either. You know, like.
You're not.
I don't want to hear that. So, it's just a weird situation right now. I don't know how much to put on the injury. I don't know how much to put on Brandon Ayuk doing something else to get slapped on the ass and sent into timeout. I don't know where to put all this right now. So, what that means to me is I shouldn't overreact, but at the same time, it's concerning no matter what. So, what do you think, man? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm wondering if come December we're Ayuk has 1,000 yards, and we're like, yeah, he probably just got in trouble. Or it could be the other way around, and he has 500 yards, and we're wondering, like, is this going to be like Dante Pettis 2.0? I don't think so. It's probably something along the lines of tough love, and hey, man, you got to practice. You got to bring it every day, because when Matt Maiocco tweeted something like that about the tough love, like, he's essentially a team employee, so they want him.
Right.
Like, if you go to 49ers.com, you'll see more articles from Matt Maiocco. So, like, he's getting this info from somebody important, and they want him to put that out in the Twitter sphere so everybody can kind of overreact as we're doing right now. But I don't know what to make of it either, just because it could be so many different things. And when you watch him, you can see that there's not the same type of explosiveness. So I think to a degree, you know, his hamstring injury has something to do with it. He didn't run very many routes. He only played 27 snaps, I believe. And some of the routes that he was running a quick out route, or I think he ran one route down the field. So maybe part of it was the hamstring, but at the same time, man, he's not going to return a punt. He's not. Putting him on the field if you're worried that he's going to have another hamstring injury or tweak his hamstring strain. There's no logical reasoning behind that. So. I don't think Kyle Shanahan owes it to us to tell us. I don't think, what coach would do that. But, yeah, there's something far, far more going on than what we're being led on to. But, again, next week he comes out, takes advantage of Darius Slay in the Philadelphia Eagles secondary. Like, what are we going to do? What are we talking about? If that happens, then we just acknowledge that it was something in the doghouse. Like, he missed team curfew or whatever it may be, right?
Right, yeah. It all of what I'm saying right now could instantly go away if Brandon Ayuk comes out next week and catches 5 passes for 92 yards and a score. And it doesn't even have to be that much, or it could be more, but at least something. We saw he was on the field the same amount as Sherfield was, essentially. They almost split the reps and had 0 targets. So, I mean, when Jimmy Garoppolo, the fucking nicest guy on the West Coast, is not even looking your way, then something's going on,
right.
You know, and it's not even necessarily that Jimmy Garoppolo's not looking this way. It's that Shanahan's not even calling plays that ask Jimmy Garoppolo to look Brandon Ayuk's way. And I guarantee you, Shanahan is going to get on the film, obviously, and he's going to watch every single one of those reps from Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be looking at what those reps look like 15 snaps in, 20 snaps in. Is he still running his ass off? Is he still running the route? Is he still looking for the ball just as much on the 20th rep as he was the first? Because if Shanahan doesn't see what he likes, then that's just more teach tape for Ayuk. You know, so
I think that's a great point, because look at the stats last year. So after week 8, Brandon Ayuk targets 10, 14, 9, 16, 13, and then
16.
Yeah, like they want to give him the ball. They want to feature their first round pick because he's really freaking good. And when watching back, now that you say that, like, I'm watching Trent Sherfield go dig out a safety in the middle of the field. Like, he's busting his ass. You don't really see that with Brandon Ayuk when it comes to blocking or just doing the little things that you need your wide receivers to be, like, you know, team players. So, yeah, that is interesting. And I do think that has a big you know, was a big reason why. It's just because, you know, maybe he's not just giving it his all on every play when he's not the intended target. But again, everything feels like conjecture right now. We don't know.
Right. Yeah. And that's what it is. I'm not going to make any proclamations. I don't know. I'm not there. We're just discussing the scenario and the fact that it seems a little more than just, well, he was nursing an injury and Trent Sherfield's good. You know, like, it's more than that. And I'm certainly not taking anything away from Trent Sherfield, who seems like the real deal and a talented player. And I'm looking forward to his time with the 49ers because I think they signed him to a 1-year deal, if I'm not mistaken. And they're probably already reworking that. So who knows, man, but the Brandon Ayuk situation. And to me, Deebo Samuel's performance kind of like is putting a shroud over it. You know, like people aren't acting like it's that big of a deal because, oh, Deebo Samuel had, you know, 82 catches for 942 yards. And it's like, it's a big deal. You know, will it end up being a big deal? I don't know. But the fact that, you know, the expected wide receiver one got zero targets in the 49ers opening game with Jimmy Garoppolo out there, who has no problem distributing the ball. Yeah, kind of a thing. So keep an eye on, I guess. You know, something to keep an eye on, I guess, is really all we need to say about it, right?
Yeah, and that's we have to monitor it. But I don't think we should overreact just because everything changes weekly in this offense, in any Kyle Shanahan offense. Like next week, Mohamed Sanu can go over 100. Next week, Jamichael Hasty can go over 100. That just happens in this offense. I don't think that would be surprising. And he's a first-round pick, man. Like, they traded up to select him. They really, really like him, and they're probably just putting peer pressure on him, or maybe not peer pressure, but, you know, just kind of saying, hey, it's my way or the highway. Will you man up? Like, it could be that simple.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's enough said. I think that's talking about it as much as it needs to be talked about at this point. And again, not really the overacting type. Don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole of what this could mean and what we're about to see. And, you know, not doing that, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on. Yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up for today. We'll be coming at you guys again on Thursday. We'll record Thursday. You guys should have it Friday morning, previewing the 49ers game against the Eagles. The 49ers, obviously, are still on the West Coast right now. East Coast. Sorry. They're still on the East Coast right now preparing for their game against the Eagles, and they'll have that on Sunday. And then after that, they will return home for the season opener against the Packers, who got absolutely trounced by the Saints. And Aaron Rodgers was, like, kind of benched and weird things. So we'll see what we get by the time that game gets here. But any last little words, any thoughts there, KP?
No, I mean, the offensive line was dominant. They're really good. They gave Jimmy G, Deebo, Elijah Mitchell all the time in the world, running lanes. So we should definitely, you know, cheers to them. Defensive line as well, as we talked about. But even going back to the offensive line, like Kittle had a few pancakes where he's just burying guys, man. Like,
oh, of course he did.
It's unreal how he finishes guys. And it's not just like safeties or DBs. He's burying like guys wearing number 90. So, yeah, he's just fun to watch. I think Aziz Al-Shaahir, however the hell you say it, I think he's going to be really freaking good. Like, he played well. He had a missed tackle. I think he might have had two. But his physicality, like, he brings it, man. Like, when he hits you, you do not hold on to the ball. And that happened a couple times. But I just think overall we are talking about a guy who I wouldn't be surprised if he, you know, eventually overtook Dre Greenlaw. Maybe that feels like a hot take, but he was a really fun player to watch, I'll say.
Yep. That's good stuff, man. KP had a chance to rewatch the game, and I have not yet. So his words hold weight. So, which is interesting, man. Like, it's something that Matt Maiocco mentioned on their episode of 49ers Talk today. If you don't check it out, you obviously should be. It's Matt Maiocco, like we said, basically lives within the 49ers organization. The 49ers, just kind of to close this off, for anyone concerned about the fact that like both Aaron Banks and Trey Sermon weren't active for the 49ers week one game, which is not good. There's no way to spin that to where it's good. Nope. Obviously, they've just started their careers. A million things could change between now and whatever we decide they are years later. The 49ers have just done well at finding talent at all levels of the draft, like later rounds, undrafted free agent. And Matt made a good point saying like, look, obviously you want the teams to hit on early round picks. They're the ones where you have the best chance at the most talented players. But at the same time, if you have an influx of a constant influx of good football players coming in, then it really doesn't matter. It does because you're missing opportunities. But as long as you have constant good football players, nobody gives a shit that George Kittle was selected in the fifth round. Nobody cares who they took the first round that year. Like, yeah, Solomon Thomas, Reuben Foster, not great. They also got George Kittle. So as long as, you know, you have good football players entering the building via the draft or undrafted free agents like Al-Shaair, then good things are going to happen. So not perfect. No GM is. They're very similar to baseball players in the fact that if you're batting 300, you're considered pretty good. But at least they seem like they're hitting at a decently frequent rate at various levels. That makes sense?
Two starting receivers, first and second rounders.
Right.
Mike Mabushi, first rounder. Yeah. He's a quality player. Trent Williams, obviously they acquired him. Lake Tomlinson acquired him. But Daniel Brunskill, starting right guard, undrafted free agent. They're starting defensive tackle just because Kinlaw was out, undrafted free agent. You talk about Greenlaw, day three pick. Al-Shaair, again, undrafted free agent. Emmanuel Mosley, when he does play, undrafted free agent. Demetrius Flanagan-Foles came in when Greenlaw was hurt, undrafted free agent. So there's talent all over the place. Diamador Lenore, fifth round pick. So like they do a really good job, like a really good job of bringing in talent. And I think that's a good point where, you know, we're only focusing on the names that we know, the names that are at the top of the draft, but there's a reason you get so many picks and those undrafted free agent ones count too.
Yeah, no, it's been cool to watch. And, you know, you're talking about undrafted free agents and late round picks having an impact on a quality team. You know, like it wouldn't be all that surprising if they were having an impact on a shitty roster. But the 49ers have a quality roster, and a lot of that can be credited towards these late round picks, mid round picks, late round picks, undrafted guys. So that's pretty impressive, you know, and that's hopefully something the 49ers keep up. You want to see them hit on the early stuff. But again, long as quality football players are on the team, as long as the team's good, no one cares when they were drafted, man. They're all football players. So you got anything else there, KP?
No, not at all. I agree with everything you just said. And once you're drafted, it doesn't matter. Once the pads come on and once practices start, man, the best player is going to play.
Yeah, that's the only reason I have you here is just so you can agree with everything I say.
I can't wait until we start disagreeing.
I know, man. I'm going to – yeah, anyways, we'll fight. We'll fight a lot. So, yeah, I appreciate you guys out there on the Striking Gold universe. It's exciting, man, now that the season started. You know, KP and I are going to be coming at you guys like three times a week. And we're going to have shit to talk about. It's not like a stale three times a week where we're kind of just trying to come up with stuff to say. We're here. We're in. It's the NFL season. It just started. We're in for the next 17 weeks. And if our premonitions are right about the 49ers, it'll be a lot longer than that. 18 weeks, I guess, with the old bye. Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for listening to the pod. Thank you for all your support over the years. Keep it coming. Make sure you're listening, downloading, rating, reviewing, subscribing, spreading the word, passing it on to your friends because we appreciate it. As always, hit us up on Twitter if you notice something funny or you got a talking point, something you want to discuss. Always try to write back to that stuff because I appreciate it. But anyways, that's KP. I'm Rob. This is Striking Gold, and we are signing out.